I will always remember my first visit to Treblinka, the Nazi death camp. It was during rabbinical school that I had the privilege of leading groups of high school students to Poland and Israel during the summers. And when you go to Treblinka today, all you see that is left is a massive field of stones of all shapes and sizes and colors. And on those monuments, you see the names of towns in Europe where the Jews were brought not to work, but to die in Treblinka. And so it was on that day that our tour guide gave us a small stone and told us to go find a significant monument that we could place it next to, as we do in the cemeteries in Jewish tradition. And for those several moments that we had, not one of those stones made an impact on me. Until the bus driver signaled us over to get back on the bus as we were heading to our next destination. And out of the corner of my eye, a stone literally stared me down. It was tall, it was orange, and on it said Ostrowiec. Ostrowiec happened to be the town where my grandfather was born. He came to this country long before the war, but so many extended family and friends that I do not even know, of course, went from Ostrowiec to their death at Treblinka. Over these last 5 years that I have been a rabbi, I have an opportunity to teach conversion classes. And when we get to the unit on the Holocaust, we always bring in a survivor of the Holocaust to speak. But to introduce the survivor, I always share that story that I just shared with you. 3 years ago, the survivor, Paula Leibovitz, who I did not know, came to share her narrative with the class. And as I always did, I shared the story about the stone in Treblinka. And as Paula rose from her seat to begin, she came over me and gave me a hug. And she told the class, "Rabbi, thanks for sharing. I'm from Ostrowiec as well." I took Paula's number home with me that evening with the intent to call her. I put it on my desk when I worked in the valley, and when I came to Sinai Temple, it still sits on my desk, and I never called her. Life got in the way, was busy, until this past week. You may have seen in the LA Times a couple of weeks ago, there was an article, the large picture, and it said, "Holocaust survivor and young German mom form a bond together." Did anybody see that article? And who was the picture of? Paula Leibovitz. So I picked up the phone this past week, and there was no answer. And so I left a message on her machine, reintroducing myself about the few moments that we met a couple of years ago. And a couple of hours later, thankfully, my office phone rang. I picked it up. She said, "Rabbi, this is Paula Leibovitz. I'm sorry I couldn't answer your phone before. I was out shopping. I was buying boots." She said, "Rabbi, those boots aren't for Hanukkah. But next month in January, I'm going back to Poland, specifically to Auschwitz, to commemorate the 70th liberation of my freedom." Nes gadol haya po. Truly a great miracle happened here. Because in early February, Paula and I have a lunch date. So I can learn more not about my grandfather, but about the place where he came from. Each day of Hanukkah, as Cantor Feldman just sang so beautifully, we say Al Hanisim. We are grateful for the miracles. In religious school and day school, growing up, we learn about the miracle of oil. That it didn't burn just one day, but of course it lasted the 8 nights. But when you read the text of Al Hanisim, there is not a mention of oil, but the miracle is about victory. Victory that we have the religious freedom to sit right here, right now, at this moment, in this sacred sanctuary with our arms wrapped around each other, as we heard so beautifully from Nora, L'dor v'dor, that we can pass those Jewish values down from generation to generation. But deeper than being grateful for our physical salvation, Hanukkah must be a time that we consider that the fact that the temple was rededicated allows us as Jews to live with Jewish values, and not us as Jews to live in a world with values antithetical to our Judaism. Rabbi Leo Young, one of the founders of modern Orthodoxy in this country, asked a simple question. He says, with the burden of our history as Jewish people, how did we survive? Many people have many different answers. Perhaps it is our poetry or our philosophy. Some may say our military might these days, or even our social control. But he has a simple answer that I think we are dealing with today. He said it's the Jewish family. He said it's the miracle of the Jewish family, which values tender education, who loves to train its youth, that succeeds in perpetuating the timeless inspiration all the way back from Abraham Avinu, Abraham our father, through Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher and rabbi, through the Maccabees not just of the Hanukkah story, but the Maccabees of every single country and every age. It was the Jewish family that achieved and continues to achieve those results. A question for us that we don't often think about, it's sort of a riddle. Have you ever wondered why the obligation to light the Chanukiah is not for the synagogue, but actually in our home? We do light the Chanukiah here every single evening, but the obligation is for us to light in our own home. Think about two different examples. First, Pesach. It's obvious why we have the Passover Seder in our home, because God passed over the Jewish homes when smiting the Egyptian firstborn, and therefore we have the meal in our home. Take a different example, the Lulav and Etrog. That was a ritual in the temple in Jerusalem, and therefore today we don't walk around our home or our gardens with our Lulav and Etrog, but we come to the synagogue and we have our Hoshanot, we have our processions. But why light the Hanukkah candle in our home when the miracle occurred in the temple? Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch stresses the same exact answer that Rabbi Leo Young spoke about, and also that Nora just spoke about. Because the miracle of Hanukkah is about the victory of the Jewish home. The Jewish family overcoming forces of assimilation from outside the Jewish community, but even more so within our own community and temple itself. He says we must first respect ourselves before we can expect anybody to respect us. Rabbi Hirsch writes, if you no longer consider your own sanctuary worthy of respect, how can you demand that a stranger respect you or your father or mother who has come before you? He says the Maccabees, they had it easy. They had one battle to fight and they fought it pretty well. But he says that we, here today, we have it a little more difficult because we have battles all over the place. One physical battle that unfortunately comes to mind, which has been in the news recently, physical battles in the classroom of Peshawar, Pakistan, where over 130 students trying to get an education, taking tests, are literally murdered and slaughtered because they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, making this world better. Why did the Taliban do this? I didn't read this answer on the news, but if I had to think of another answer, perhaps because when they understood, the Taliban understands pretty well that if you get rid of the value of family, if you make family non-existent, then you also have a pretty good chance of getting rid of and destroying the soul as well. And so this morning, we celebrate. We celebrate family and community, and and specifically grandparents. For those of you who were here early enough when Rabbi Fruithandler invited first grandmothers and then grandfathers up on the Bima, it was truly a miracle to see more people on this Bima than there were sitting in our pews. Nes gadol hayapo. A great miracle has happened here. Because Grandparent Shabbat is about telling us as a Jewish community that we believe in the power of family with the bond of love between parents and children, but even more significantly, between grandparents and grandchildren. The great teacher and commentator, the Sfat Emet, asked us another question that we often don't think about. If it is recorded that the Greeks destroyed all the oil in the temple, how is it that there was a jar of oil found by the priests? If there was no oil, then how was there any oil to light the Chanukiah or the menorah? The Sfat Emet answered with a metaphor, a deeper understanding of what Hanukkah is all about. He said that jar of oil that they found in the temple was the indestructible jar that each of us has in our heart and soul that can never be sullied or contaminated, but it requires searching to find it. When I learned that from the Sfat Emet, I realized subconsciously why I picked up the phone to call my new friend Paula Leibovitz. I realized that I was searching for that indestructible jar, and with that phone call, I began to find it. Because I knew deep down that I did not want to be responsible for extinguishing the flame of a Ostrovich. I didn't want to share with my children just the picture of a stone in Treblinka. But I want to share with my children stories and memories that I don't even know yet, of people that I never met. And from that I can learn from Paula. And from that we can learn from our grandparents, and through technology, thankfully, from our grandchildren, about the small flame that flickers, but as importantly, the search for each one of us to find the oil that will ignite that flame, because we know that flame will ignite another, and another, and another. The book of Mishlei, the book of Proverbs, has beautiful wisdom and advice. And on the gravestone of my maternal grandfather, buried in Israel of blessed memory, our family wrote this: Ateret zekenim b'nei vanim, v'tiferet banim avotam. The crown of old age are loyal grandchildren, even as the glory of children are their parents. May this Shabbat of grandparenthood strengthen the bonds of the generations as we go from the door by door, from generation to generation. May those bonds ignite the flame of the miracles right before our eyes. And let us say,